Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, November 8th, 2012. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. With this week's System Wars, we take you to the Australian National Homebrew Conference to explore the question of which chilling method reigns supreme. If you're new to home brewing and would like to get into the hobby for the first time, check out our website, basicbrewing.com, where you can find archives of our audio and video podcasts and our DVDs to walk you through basic and more advanced brewing techniques. You can follow me on Twitter. My username is Basic Brewing, all one word. You can find me on Facebook at facebook.com/basicbrewing.james. And our show page on Facebook is at facebook.com/basicbrewing. Thanks again to everybody clicking on the Amazon.com associate link on our basicbrewing.com site. Whenever you think of Amazon, think of us first. And go to our website, basicbrewing.com, click on our associate link. That will take you to Amazon.com. And then whatever you purchase, we'll get a percentage from that, a little commission. It won't cost you any extra. That's the good news. And you'll be helping us to bring you the show. And we greatly appreciate everybody who does that. We also have associate links for Brew Your Own Magazine and the American Homebrewers Association on our site, too. And they work in a similar fashion. You can find our Basic Brewing iPhone and Android podcast apps on their respective stores, and the Android podcast app is also on Amazon. We're on the BlackBerry podcast directory, and we're on the Stitcher app as well. We're still thinking of those of you who were in the path of Sandy. It looks like another storm is bearing down on the same area to add insult to injury. So here's hoping that your lives regain some sense of normalcy soon. In the meantime, I hope that we can kind of help out by giving you a source of diversion here at the podcast so you can think of something else for a little while. Let's get right to it. Speaking of which, shall we? As you heard on this podcast a while back, Andy Davison, chairman of the Australian National Homebrew Conference, invited Chris Colby, editor of Brew Your Own Magazine, and me to take part in the Australian National Homebrew Conference, the AHNC. And he challenged us to conduct an experiment, including you, our listeners, to compare different chilling methods. Now, down there, they call it System Wars, and this is the second time brewers with different brewing techniques have been set against each other in friendly competition. Chris and I were included in the conversation via Skype, and I greatly appreciate the opportunity to play along. So what you're about to hear is Brendan O'Sullivan as he heads up the session, and you'll hear the audio from a very well-produced video. You can find a link to that video in the description of this episode on basicbrewingvideo.com or basicbrewingradio.com. I'm all confused. And users of the Basic Brewing app will find it there as well. After the conference audio, I invited Andy Davison and Chris Colby to get back together for a quick recap to go over some of the things that were talked about during the session. So first of all, let's take you down to Melbourne and Brendan O'Sullivan.
Our experiment is comparing immersion chilling, counterflow chilling, and no chilling. To compare the effect of the process on both the sensory aspects, how the malt flavour comes across, how the bitterness comes across, and how late hopping kind of translates, as well as having a little bit of a look at the water usage across those systems. That's one of the big differences between no-chill versus the other chilling methods. It's one of the main reasons that people do opt to not chill their beer is because they feel a lot better about not using so much water. So, our beer, we used a 1045 specific gravity wort brewed on the 200 litre Braumeister that you can see over in the corner over here. Very homogenous, so the idea was to take all of the variation out of the experiment. We brewed up a big batch, they all got 40 litres of that wort at 1045, and the goal was to top up to 1045 at the end of the boil, so we had a consistent original gravity for all the beers. They're all given the same amount of hops, 100 grams of pellets and 50 grams of flour hops to use as per their system. So they were told to bitter the beer between 30 and 40 IBUs, and they could use the light hops however it suited their system. So obviously the counterflow guy was going to put his flours into his hop back, and the no-chiller was going to put his hops in the cube. All the hops had to be used on the hot side, so that we had no dry hopping, just to keep things simple, and so that any differences in chilling would be highlighted rather than who could add the most hops to their fermenter. I was mashed at 67 degrees. Cool, so the goal was to brew a balanced beer. Obviously, you could brew the most bitter beer or the most aromatic beer, but the idea was to make something that was going to translate as a good beer for you to drink. So we'll be sampling all three of those beers shortly, and you'll get to decide which one you prefer. You're not going to know which they are. They'll be labelled A, B and C. And then we'll take a show of hands, and then we'll reveal later on who the winner is. I'll just run through a little bit of the brew day, how the brewers went about what they did. So starting with, that's a little picture there from brew day, of our Rory, who did the no chilling, relaxing, because he's finished his brew day while the other two are still fastidiously trying to man their chillers. So the immersion method, immersion chiller, it was a copper half-inch immersion coil, agitated during the cooling, so kind of sort of replicating the Jimmy Oll method, where you're recirculating the wort to optimise the cooling rate. He used hops all throughout the boil and a mixture of flours and pellets. He was targeting, I think, about 35 IBU. His chilling took 47 minutes at a flow rate of about 2.65 litres per minute. I've got a little... should have a graph there, but it's not. Oh well. So I used 125 litres in 47 minutes. So quite a bit of water, but not over the top. Most of you would know from using immersion chillers, you use around that kind of 3 to 5 times your volume, depending on how effective your chiller is. Moving on to the counterflow, he used a little bit more water, 140 litres, targeted a slightly lower bitterness of 32. He had a 60 plate heat exchanger for 40 litres of wort, a really big hopback, and a march pump to transfer the wort from the hopback through the chiller into his fermenter. He used 140 litres, so a little bit more water, but he was knocking out at 18 degrees. The immersion chiller only got his down to about 21, then we had to chill it a little bit further in the fridge, just to get it down to the same pitching temperature. So kind of marginal differences in water usage. I think the big thing is you can optimise your system to use less water, regardless of whether you're using immersion chiller or a counterflow chiller. And the no-chill, he used 2 plastic cubes to clean them. The main water usage in cleaning cubes or using no-chill is cleaning the cubes. Most people tend to fill their cubes up from what I've heard. That's what I do at home. I fill it up with a cleaner, soak it, empty that, or use it for other cleaning, and then fill it up with a steriliser. Rory only used 5 litres. He used a couple of litres for cleaning, then a couple of litres for sterilising. And a lot of people do that as well, so it's pretty common to either fill them up or to not use much water at all. He did bittering addition, kind of a middle boil bittering addition, and then a late hop flavour addition, and split the rest of the flours into his cubes. So filled at about 90 degrees, or about 85 degrees in the cube, and then sealed up to chill. So I was initially surprised that the immersion chiller used less water, because you'd think that the higher efficiency of using a plate chiller would mean you'd use less, but I think given the stirring of the wort and the fact that the counterflow chiller used knocked out at a slightly lower temperature might explain that slight higher usage in water. We're hoping to cross, with this experiment, we've teamed up with Basic Brewing Radio. James Spencer has put it out to his listeners to participate in this experiment. So he's had a few people jump on and do similar experiments at home, splitting a batch, not chilling some and then chilling the rest, and had a look at their water usage. And they've done some sensory stuff with Chris Colby at Brew Your Own, so we'll be crossing that to them a little bit later. But for now, we're gonna go through the beers. And I'll let you taste them. They'll be labelled A, B and C. You don't know which ones they are. Yeah, cool. So we'll show a video from the brew day. I'll show you what went on during the brew. It's a little bit rough. Please excuse our IT. But we'll show that video, give you a bit of a look at what went on, and then we'll get the samples out for you to analyse. All right, cool. So this happened on a Sunday morning. over at Grain and Grape, where they've got the Braumeister set up. All the brewers brought their own equipment, so they were familiar with their setup, what they were using, how they were going to use it. I find the beers pretty
similar. So it's 10 o'clock on a Sunday morning, day after grand final day. A little bit worried, none of the brewers are here yet, but yeah, hopefully they're all on their way. I trust that they haven't had too big a night. Standing next to me is the Braumeister 200 litre, fancy automated German brew house. We're brewing a homogenous wort, 95% Pilsner malt and 5% crystal, to be distributed between three brewers to process as per their system. I guess it brings the focus onto each of the systems. It means that everyone has a common ground, the same wort, the same mashing profile. There's no variation there, so any difference in the finished beer is going to be due to their process, not how they produce their wort. I think it's a pretty level playing field. I've done some no chilling myself and have had pretty good results. I know I've seen some really good hoppy wort kits that have been clean, hoppy, fresh. So. Yeah, I think it's going to be a tough challenge. It's going to come down to each of the brewers' skill and how they decide to approach it.
My name's Ian, and I'm brewing using the immersion chiller today. Immersion chilling involves running cold water through a copper coil sitting inside the copper while stirring the wort. I think it's a middle ground in terms of difficulty. It's quite easy to set up. It doesn't involve any much pre-cleaning or sterilization, which you have for the counterflow chilling, but obviously it does require a bit of attention while you are chilling as well. So I think it's probably a middle ground sort of method. I'm going to be adding hops throughout the boil, just throw them in, and then they'll just get whirlpooled at the end. I'm using a combination of pellets and flours, and I'll be using a combination of pellets and flours for the bitterness, and I'll be using a combination of pellets and flours for the aroma and flavour at the end.
How did you know I feel good, Gabe? Live! I saw the camera.
I don't feel a need to slag anyone off, but my system's going to brew the best beer because I am using it. Well, I suppose he knows what he's doing. So I'm told, so.
So my name's Wilson Heath, and today for the System Wars, I'm brewing with a counterplate chiller. When it comes to like counterplate chilling, I think one of the major benefits of it is the fact that you can hit your pitching temperature on the first run. So you're knocking out and you got your flow rate right, and you're coming out at 18 degrees or whatever, you hit it on the head. You don't have to kind of wait around to pitch, so. You know, your wort isn't sitting around at that really vulnerable temperature. It's pretty quick, like I'll usually knock out 30 litres in under 10 minutes. I think in terms of effective beer flavour and quality, it really captures the hop. All the whirlpool hops don't kind of go to God. And then you get to also use a hop back, which is a nice touch. So today I've chosen to hop my beer with just a 60-minute addition, a 20-minute like kind of flavour addition. Of 8 IBU, 32 in total, so 24 at the back, 8 at 20, and then 50 grams of hops in the hop back, so just really let the hop back shine in the situation. And now the beer, I think it'll be quite nice. I'm looking for balance and just really good hop aroma, and I think I'll get that with the immersion chiller, with the plate chiller. Yeah,
what happened earlier?
What stays in the brew house. What happens in the brew house stays in the brew house.
I'm Rory Murphy, and I am doing no chill. Well, I'll basically be allowing the wort to chill overnight in a sanitized cube. I will boil it normally right through, and my hopping schedule will more resemble a 90-minute boil, even though it's a 60-minute boil. That's the way I work it out. At the end, I'll turn flame out, and I will, you know, whirlpool, let it settle for a little while, and then just transfer it to the cube, and then I'll continue hopping in the cube. And the traditional methods, obviously chilling has been around for years and there's merits to it. They're probably not really for me because A, convenience. I like the convenience of no chill because I'm able to transfer it to a cube. It's a lot quicker. I'm able to get my brew day done and finished quicker. I also have the versatility of being able to put it into a cube and pitch the yeast at a time when it's convenient to me, when my fermenting fridge is free. So those sort of lifestyle benefits are definitely a big plus for me in sort of having to fit brewing in around work and family and everything else in your life. The only other thing I guess from that is that with no chill, I'm not using any water, or I'm using very minimal water. And when I went from chilling, I used to use an immersion chiller, and I went to no chill and I was very happy that I wasn't using all that water and just killing the planet like those other bastards.
All right, things are looking pretty good so far. We had a bit of a hiccup earlier with Wilson having a boil over. Might have lost some of his bitterness, some of his hops. What else happened? Ian forgot his top hop liquor, started chilling before he topped up. He's been whirlpooling during the chill, which is getting the temp down pretty quick, but he's still using lots of water. No chill, one of the cubes isn't quite full. Unfortunately, Rory didn't quite get his volumes right. So we'll see if that has an effect on the quality of the beer. But yeah, my early feeling is that Wilson's hop pack's gonna add quite a significant fresh hop character, but yeah, it'll be interesting to find out.
So that's what happened on the brew day. We're going to cross over to James Spencer and Chris Colby now. James is going to run through the results of his listeners. Barry Cranston was one of them. He's in the room, so we might have a little chat with him if he's up for it. But yeah, we'll get this sorted and we'll cross over to them. Yeah, they did a very similar experiment. They've got a bit more scientific data for us as well. I know they've lined up some lab experiments to analyse IBU, so I'll hand over to you, James, and you can take it away.
Hi, everybody. Can you hear us?
We can. We can.
Hey! It's great to be here. Thanks for having us. You know, I'm less jet-lagged than I thought I would be, so that's a good thing.
Thanks for being here.
I can't hear the tremendous laughter that must be emanating from the room, but tough crowd.
Well, again, thanks to everybody for inviting us. This has been a lot of fun. Chris, I'm going to toss it over to you, and I want you to kind of outline the experiment as far as we were concerned from our side of things. So take it away, Chris.
Yeah, our experiment is probably very similar to yours. We envision people doing two or potentially more beers, but brewing two beers, keeping all the variables the same with the exception of the chilling method. And over here in the States, the two most common methods of chilling are using an immersion chiller or using either a plate chiller or a counterflow chiller. And so yeah, basically the idea was brew two beers, brew the same beer, treat them identically except for the chilling method.
Now, I'm just going to summarize these fairly quickly while we've got the Skype connection, and it's going well. We had Bob Stimsky from Wisconsin who brewed a black IPA. He did brew in a bag. He chilled half of the wort, and half of the wort was transferred via a plastic container directly while it was still hot. And he also chilled the second half with an immersion chiller. Now, Bob added hops for bittering flavor, and he added dry hopping in the fermenter for both halves. So that deviated a bit from our initial experiment idea, which was to treat both halves exactly the same through the fermentation process, but that's okay. Barry Cranston, who's down there? Are you down there, Barry?
Yeah.
Barry did a Kolsch, two 25-liter all-grain batches brewed simultaneously, one hop addition at 60 minutes. The no-chill batch was whirlpooled and allowed to stand for 15 minutes before transfer. The immersion chiller batch was chilled to 19 degrees Celsius for 10 minutes, whirlpooled and allowed to sit for 15 minutes before transfer. We had two batches from Juhani Paltala in Espoo, Finland. I hope I'm pronouncing some of that correctly. And he did these, coincidentally, he did these two experiments before we announced the collaborative experiment. He did a rye IPA and a Belgian pale ale, and he treated them pretty much the same. The rye IPA was a light, dry malt extract with steeping grains beer. Late hops were added to the container for the no-chill batch, while the late hops were added in the last 5 minutes of the boil for the chilled half. So again, he did the hopping differently in both of those halves. The Belgian pale ale was hopped in a similar way, using brew in a bag instead of dry malt extract. And then I did an American pale ale. I did a dry malt extract batch with steeping grains, and I only boiled for 15 minutes because you only have to boil extract for 15 minutes. So what I did was I added a bunch of hops at the 15-minute mark, a bunch more at the 10-minute mark, and a bunch more at the 5-minute mark. And half of my hot wort, it's the same wort split in half, half was transferred hot into a plastic container, and the second half was chilled with an immersion chiller. Now, I'll go ahead and talk about the water usage now. Barry reports that his no-chill batch took 51 liters of water, and immersion chilling took 102 liters. And my no-chill, I'll just go ahead and leave the gallons off for you guys, I estimated 42 to 45 liters for the no-chill and 142 liters plus 10 pounds or 4.5 kilograms of ice for the chilling. So that's basically an overview of the experiments that we had reports on. And we will come back in a few minutes and talk about the sensory data and the lab data. So now back to you in the studio.
Thank you. Hello. Cool. Hi. Thanks, James. So we're going to get the three samples out now. Make sure you save a little bit of all of them to compare. You're just looking for whichever beer you prefer, really. There might be some faults in there. The things to look out for might be DMS. As we saw earlier with Peter, there is that problem with SMM converting to DMS after the boil if you haven't boiled hard enough and the wort stands hot for a while. So that's one thing that might pop up in these beers. It may not. There might be a difference in bitterness or perceived bitterness, whether it's smooth, harsh, and obviously a difference in a hot flavour and aroma. So they're the things to be thinking about. Clarity as well, there might be a bit of a difference in clarity, so make sure you have a look at all three of them and decide which one you think is the best. But yeah, do hold on to all three. All three were processed exactly the same after brew day. They're all fermented in the same size fermenter with the same amount of yeast, the same amount of oxygenation, and they're all the brew in a bag was started the day after. But they were all fermented for the same amount of time, fined with the same amount of finings, and then kegged and carbonated at the same time. So we've eliminated as many of the variables as we can. So you can go through the beers, have a taste, make sure you know which is which and you don't get them mixed up. A has got a little blue mark on the lip of the glass, so make sure you keep that one first. And let us know what you think. What's everyone think of the first beer? Anyone want to have a talk about it? Let us know their thoughts. I'm finding it quite fruity. A little bit of ester and quite a bit of hop. Yeah, I think there is some off flavours in there, but they seem to be consistent throughout the batches. I might be getting a little bit of aldehyde as well. But that wasn't the brewer's fault. That was mine for not controlling fermentation. These were brewed with 95% Pilsner malt. If you've forgotten already or if I didn't mention it, just so you know, it might have a little bit of a different malt character that you're used to in pale ales, maybe a little bit lighter, and a 5% crystal. They're all about 4.8% in alcohol,
give or take 0.1. So they're all pretty similar. They all finished at 10.10 final gravity and all started about 10.45, 10.46. Who thought that A was the best beer? All right, cool. And beer B, who thought that B was the better beer?
Maybe we're right.
And C, who thought that C was the better beer there?
19.
Cool. Well, it does look like we've got a clear winner there. But I'll leave you with some suspense. We're going to cross back to James and Chris now, and they're going to tell us how the beers tasted, what the perception was in their experiments and from their listeners. So, over to you, James and Chris. Let us know how they tasted.
Well, Bob Stemsky, with his Black IPA, reports that all of his tasters perceive no difference between the chilled and no-chilled beers. Now, remember, Bob is the one that dry-hopped in the fermenter. So, apparently, dry-hopping in the fermenter, if you're worried about your beers tasting any different, especially with his recipe, dry-hopping tends to, I guess, erase any perceived differences between those two. Barry with a Kolsch, and Barry, you can, I guess, correct me if I misinterpret your readings here, but differences in aroma considered minor, as well as the flavors were considered fairly minor. In flavor, pardon me, several thought the chilled batch was more Kolsch-like, being more fruity and having more Kolsch yeast character. Some found the no-chill a bit more malty or sweeter. The no-chill batch was perceived as being a bit more bitter, with bitterness lingering more on the finish. And I believe that Barry quoted Peter Simons by saying that Peter had brewed a Kolsch in a similar way with the no-chill previously and had perceived it as being a bit more bitter as well. Juhani did the rye APA, or American Pale Ale, and you remember that he put his late hops for the no-chill in the container, and for the chilled batch, he put them in the last of the boil. Juhani says the aroma and flavor of the no-chill batch was a bit more fruity, or in other words, had more hop character, and the chilled beer was a bit more bitter in that case. So that's opposite of what Barry thought. The Belgian Pale Ale beers were very similar, with no-chill having more hop aroma and flavor. I did the American Pale Ale, and I sent samples to Chris for sensory evaluations, and I sent samples to Brad Sturgeon up at Monmouth College in Monmouth, Illinois. And Chris, what were your perceptions between the chilled and the no-chilled batches?
Yeah, I sampled both of the beers James brewed. They're both hoppy American style pale ale. The results were very, very similar. Both beers were they were the sort of thing that if you wouldn't taste them like right side by side, you would probably think they were the same beer. But tasting them directly side by side and focusing on critically evaluating them, there were some differences. I got a little bit more hop aroma from the beer that was chilled, and slightly less from the no-chill. The amount of hop bitterness was the same. I thought the malt quality in the no-chill one was slightly better, but that might have been slightly thrown off by, I think the no-chill one was slightly more carbonated than the other two. So there might have been a little bit of a secondary influence there. But overall, very similar. I was expecting the no-chill batch to have maybe some problems with DMS, maybe have some sort of not quite contaminated flavors, but just from taking that long to chill, have some sort of unidentifiable off flavors. But really, I was kind of surprised that both of the beers tasted as similar as they did.
Yeah, I guess if there's one takeaway, overarching takeaway that we can take from this experiment was that no-chill is a legitimate brewing technique in that nobody reported having nasty off flavors by doing no-chill. So you were saying that you got more of a hop aroma from the chilled?
Very slightly.
Almost everybody that I shared these beers with, and I did two batches, I kind of screwed up the process with the first one. That's another story. But the chilled batch was perceived as more citrusy or grapefruity, had more of a hop, American hop flavor and aroma. And some perceived the no-chill batch to have a higher bitterness. Now, in the lab data, I sent this up to Brad Sturgeon of Monmouth College. I sent him three bottles of each, and we'll give you the averages of those testing. The chilled batch averaged an IBU level of 53.8. The no-chill batch, drum roll please, averaged IBUs of 62.5. So almost 10 IBUs higher. Now, I did put a lot of hops in this beer, so it may be exaggerated, but there was a higher measured bitterness level in the no-chill batch. And remember, I didn't do anything different between those two halves of the wort other than transfer one directly into the plastic container and then chill the other and transfer it directly into a fermenter, racking the not-chilled one the next day and fermenting for the same amount of time in the same place. So there is some data there that you do get some additional hop utilization, at least with the recipe that I made, with the hops or the wort being in the no-chill container. So is that a surprise to you, Chris?
Not really. I mean, it makes sense that you would have the heat from the no-chill. It's going to take a while for that to cool down, and alpha acids that are in the wort and not isomerized to isoalpha acids would have the time to isomerize and produce some extra bitterness. An interesting thing, though, I mean, when I tasted the beers side by side, I didn't really get much of a... I mean, it might be because there was more hop aroma in the other that it sort of compensated for that, but it didn't... I mean, if you would have told me, you did just tell me, but if you were to tell me these were 10 IBUs apart and I was just tasting them, I don't know if I would believe that. It seems, I would guess if I was just assigning IBU that they would be closer. It's kind of interesting.
I'm glad that Bob and Juhani deviated from the experiment and treated the two different batches differently in their late hopping or dry hopping procedures, because it gives me an idea that you could negate any difference in the loss of hop aroma or flavor by changing the way you add those late hops in a no-chill batch. So, just on another note, I enjoyed the process of no-chill. Especially in the summertime when our water temperature is around 25 degrees Celsius, 26 degrees Celsius, coming out of the tap, it's hard to get wort chilled down in a fairly quick manner. So no chill is something that I'm definitely going to try again. So I recommend people play around with it and maybe do an experiment yourself and see what you come up with. So thanks, everybody, again for letting us play along.
Yes, thank you.
That's everyone applauding for you guys. Yeah, thanks for all your efforts, guys. Much appreciated. So before we reveal the identity of those beers, I'd just like to get some feedback on anyone why they voted the way they did, what the differences were they thought they perceived. So you'll get Lachlan to run around with the mic. Is anyone willing to give us their feedback? Obviously, you had a preference. Is there any reason you had a preference? Anyone? Gonna put themselves on the line.
I didn't think any of them were, or the beer in general was a particularly interesting beer. All right, there was nothing bad about it. It's not interesting.
Yep.
I went for A because I thought the hop aroma made it a bit more interesting.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you. Andrew.
Can I just ask for a quick call of votes for Category D, which is those that couldn't actually tell any difference between the three of them?
Anyone? A couple?
All right. Yay!
I did really struggle early on when I first kegged them. I thought they were all pretty similar. Yes, Mark?
Yeah, I found the balance in A of the fruitiness and just the overall very pleasant drinking beer. I found B quite quite harsh and vegetative on the aroma, and then quite harsh in the bitterness at the end. And C had a bit of the same character, not as vegetative, but quite a strong lingering bitterness that was a bit out of balance for such a light beer.
Sure. Yeah, I agree with Mark. I did get quite a vegetative character from the second sample. Did anyone else pick up on anything in any of the three beers? Any vegetative? Definitely B, yeah.
I voted B because I felt my perception of bitterness, it seemed like it was higher. It was more bitter than the other beers. Not by a lot, but just by enough to where that bitterness helped to mask some of the faults in the beers. You know, I was getting a bit of diacetyl, a bit of, you know, a little bit of acetaldehyde.
Yeah.
I just felt B masked that a little bit better than the three. The third one was really, like, that aroma was just funky. And, you know, it was kind of marmalade-y, butterscotchy. I don't know what it is specifically, but I just felt B masked that for good or for bad, but I was a B man.
Sure. Yeah, I got that sort of butterscotchy vanilla on the third one as well, yeah.
Cool.
Any other questions?
Awesome. Well, yeah, before I reveal the results, I just want to say that, yeah, it is something that you can try at home, and I would recommend you to give it a go if you're interested, or if you want to try it for yourself. That probably will present differently in different styles of beer, or given different late hopping or different malts. We did use a German Pilsner malt here to exacerbate that DMS formation, which might have been a bit unfair on the no-chill beer. But yeah, that's what we are. I guess we were trying to prove a lot of people believe that you can't get DMS formation, or that it doesn't really exist in no-chill. So we might have resolved that today. So without further ado, I'm going to announce the results. In third place with only 20 votes was Beer B. That was the no-chill batch. I do agree there was quite a bit of vegetative DMS aroma in that, as well as in the flavour. And Jeff's comments on the high bitterness do make sense, given that it was put into a cube with hop flowers in there. Would explain a high utilisation, given that they didn't have a huge amount of hop to work with. In second place with 30 votes was Beer C. That was the counterflow chiller, so the plate chiller. So that leaves just one beer. The immersion chiller came out on top with 49 votes, about half the votes. That's it. Immersion chiller came out on top this one. Congratulations, immersion coils and those that use immersion chillers. And that's it. For me for now. We're going to go on a lunch break now. I'll see if there's anyone for a closing address. Ben? Thanks, guys.
Well, Andy and Chris, we are back. We're back for a little recap of the session. I thought it went really well, didn't you?
Yeah, it did. The group participation worked really well. We got some good results out of it. Enough, I think, to say at least initially that there is something to look at here. So,
and the you got a bit different results from what we did. We didn't find any in the respondents that we had. We didn't find any off flavors or defects in any of the batches. And your no chill batch did have some defects in it, though.
We used German Pilsner malt to try to accentuate any presence of DMS, because there was a theory going in that no chill and to a certain extent counterflow chilling would generate the conversion of SMM to DMS through that high temperature range where the wort is sitting for a little time.
Does that make sense to you, Chris?
Yeah.
Can you explain that a little further?
Yeah, no. German Pilsner malts are kilned to a very light color. They aren't, as compared to, say, an English pale ale malt or something that might be kilned about, you know, 3 Lovibond or whatever. German Pilsner malts are, you know, sometimes 1.5 to 2, some in that range. And so they're prone to giving off a DMS or producing the precursor for DMS that then turns into DMS in your beer, whereas the, you know, some of the other malts, like an English pale ale malt, that'll be driven off in the kilning stage of malting. So Yeah, I mean, I think, and we talked about this, part of the reason for the difference between the differences in the experiments that they got and we got might be differences in our base malts. Because you, James, used malt extract, for one thing, which would have been boiled and cooled, and the DMS should have been expelled. And they started with a very lightly kilned base malt.
Andy, did you have any no-chill brewers come up to you afterwards and kind of rebut the results?
No, interestingly, we didn't. Nearly everybody picked up on the high level of sweetness, the buttery sweetness, or the butterscotch, or the vanilla qualities of both the no-chill and the counterflow chiller, interestingly enough, to varying levels.
So in your side of things, the immersion chiller came out a winner, both in the and in the taste testing and the fact that the immersion chiller used less water than a plate chiller, which was pretty surprising to me.
Yeah, it was to me too. It's been something I've wanted to try out for ages, since, you know, everyone started playing around with whirlpooling in a homebrew environment. You know, the original supposition was the plate chiller is going to be used less water. So it was really interesting to see an immersion chiller come out on top on that front.
So what was the temperature of the water going through the immersion chiller and going through the plate chiller?
Being Melbourne water at the time, it was probably going through around about the, I'd say 18 degrees, between 18 and 20 degrees, something like that.
So that'd be about 65 degrees Celsius, somewhere around there.
Yeah.
So, Chris, do you think that having either cooler water or warmer water as the chiller water, do you think that that would make a difference in whether the immersion chiller or the plate chiller would perform better?
It's hard to see how that would change it. I mean, you would think that no matter the temperature that the water is, that the, you know, comparatively that the results would be the same. But someone who knows thermodynamics better might be better equipped to.
If you have an ability to keep your cooling fluid significantly colder than you were, then you're going to get a higher temperature differential, and that's going to pull the temperature of the wort that's flowing through down faster. But I guess not many people really have the ability to keep a constant flow of coolant at around, you know, 2 degrees or lower to really crash it down that fast.
Yeah, I guess my question basically was, you know, is an immersion chiller more efficient than a plate chiller at different temperature variations? In other words, would the plate chiller outshine the immersion chiller if the water were to be actually colder? And I don't know if that makes sense or not.
I would have thought, given the whole concept of a plate chiller is to increase the surface area contact between the coolant and the wort that you're trying to cool down. So unless you've got a particularly large surface area in your immersion chiller, which you kind of do have when I think about it, because we are whirlpooling at the same time, so it's giving you a larger surface contact between the wort and the coolant. I guess then you start to look at coming up with an immersion chiller that has a convoluted channel so that you make sure there's no laminar flow through of the coolant through the chiller. That'd be the next stage of progress there. But
the immersion chiller that I have at home has that. It's got like a piece of plastic in it that's wound so that it makes a turbulent flow as it moves through the chiller. In the States, there's a couple different homebrew shops that sell those. With that very idea, to make a turbulent flow through the chiller, so that it, you don't get a central line of water running to the chiller that doesn't ever, get near the edges and pick up heat.
Well, these are more questions for another experiment. Well, guys, thanks again, Andy, to everybody, you and Brendan, and everybody down there who invited us to play along. It was a lot of fun, and I hope that by the way, you sent us the video so that I'll be able to put that on the Basic Brewing website in the description of this episode and in the Basic Brewing app as well. And it's a really, really good job on whoever produced the video.
Yeah, that's our guy, James. He does a brilliant job with that stuff. And it'll certainly put a bit of context around some of the audio grabs that that are in the program today. So it'll be worth people checking out that video. But thank you very much, James and Chris, for both being available. it's great fun to do, and hopefully we can do more of them in future.
Excellent. Cheers, yes. Guys.
Cheers.
Well, thanks again to Chris, Andy, Brendan, and everybody who took part in the experiment, as usual. Also, many thanks to Brad Sturgeon at Monmouth College again for his help in the lab. Very, very useful and informative. I'm looking forward to playing more with No Chill. I was skeptical at first about Brewing a Bag, you know, which is kind of the cousin of No Chill. And now Brewing a Bag has become a standard tool in my brewing toolkit. So who knows? I mean, maybe No Chill, especially in the summertime. That would be really handy to play with, especially if I can figure out how to get the hop flavor and aroma that was missing in the No Chill batch that I used for the experiment. It sounds like we've got some good suggestions on how to do that. If you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to james@basicbrewing.com or just fill out the contact form at basicbrewing.com, and please don't forget to tell us where you're from. Be sure to check out our DVDs, Extract Brewing and Partial Mashing, Stepping into All Grain, Low-Tech Lagering and Decoction Mashing, and Introduction to Wine Kits. You can find them all on our site. We've got combo deals to save you a few bucks if you want to buy more than one DVD at a time. And you can check out our Basic Brewing shirts in the store, too. You can see a listing of the fine folks across the country who sell our DVDs on basicbrewing.com. And if there isn't a vendor in your area, you can order them online in our online shop at basicbrewingshop.com. Thanks to everybody who's continued to click on our Amazon.com link. We appreciate the support there. Our featured products this week that were purchased through the link are Moonwalking with Einstein, The Art and Science of Remembering Everything, and Moonwalking with Einstein, The Art and Science of Remembering Everything. Thanks again, everybody. Remember, I can't tell who bought what, so no worries. Just click on the Amazon.com logo on our site the next time you feel like Amazon shopping. We greatly appreciate your support. Don't forget, you can also join the American Homebrewers Association or subscribe to Brew Your Own magazine through an associate link on basicbrewing.com. That's all until next week. Until then, thanks for listening. I'm James Spencer. Production help for Basic Brewing Radio and our website is provided by Kelly Dunson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. So long.